This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A Portland man dies in an officer-involved shooting. A Christmas ship boat catches on fire, and a gun is found in a preschooler's backpack.
A Christmas ship boat.
Did I say Christmas ship boat?
Yes.
Well, they're not really ships. Most of them are boats, but they call them Christmas ships.
Boats.
They call them ships, though, but they're boats.
They called them green onions, but they're really scallions. As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, December 17th, 2010. A man died in an officer-involved shooting in northeast Portland early Friday morning. Police first responded to the area at 3 a.m. this morning after someone called 911 to report a dispute between neighbors at the Ventura Park Apartments, located near the intersection of 172nd and East Burnside. Officers were on the scene for approximately 20 minutes, then cleared the call after things settled down, said Peach Simpson with the Portland Police Bureau. But things didn't remain calm. About a half an hour later, someone called 911 again and said that a man armed with a handgun was threatening to kill them.
I wonder how many people in that part of town have 911 as one of those, like, the three pre-dials on their phone. You know, the old school phone where it has, like, the picture of the flames for the fire department, and then a picture of, like, blue or something for the cops. And how many people actually press that a lot?
Call the police again, Marge.
Yeah, if there's just some sort of a, you know, or if they've got just like a voice dial command on their iPhone or something. You know, cops!
They know the dispatchers by first name.
Yeah.
Hi, Jeannie.
Terry, it's Marge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. No, he's into the hooch again.
Officers returned to the scene and gunfire broke out when they spotted the suspect, Simpson said. Then the suspect disappeared from view and officers evacuated the area as specialized CERT officers arrived as backup. Once all the area residents, including some children, were safely evacuated, the CERT officers moved in to find the suspect. He was described as a 45-year-old man, but his name has not yet been released. Police have not said why the argument broke out between the neighbors in the first place. The investigation continues.
Are we certain that he is, in fact, no good, though?
I'm sure he's no good.
All right.
Although maybe the other guy was no good. Maybe he was just protecting what was his.
That's true. It's also possible they were dividing up the evil between them. You know, that maybe it was a bit of a wash.
Or the meth.
Yeah. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Do I seem exceptionally tall today?
You do.
The chair seems like...
You are super tall.
Here's the thing. I don't think anybody's been in the studio since we did the show yesterday.
No, they should not have been.
And so, yet the chair was a lot higher. So I wonder if occasionally, like, the janitor is coming in and sort of fancying himself, you know, if he's a... Now it is Hector who is the talk show host.
Maybe you grew.
Now Luis will tell the world what is what.
And he just sits and twirls around, and then he dances like a pretty little ballerina. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, December 17th, 2010. You can get this program later on today via iTunes if you would like. Also as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. Coming up next hour, it is the Rick Emerson radio program that will be happening over at rickemerson.com. So be listening and so forth and whatnot. And hey. Here's Don Taylor.
A boat participating in the Christmas ship parade. A boat.
Not a ship.
In the Christmas ship parade.
All right. Well, I don't know. I don't approve.
Caught fire in Portland's River Place Marina on Thursday evening. Crews got to the marina on Southwest Montgomery Street just before 7 p.m. and found the 32-foot trawler boat on fire. Why would you say trawler boat? Isn't a trawler a boat?
To trawl is an activity, so it seems like there could be other things that trawl.
Okay. Firefighters quickly knocked down the blaze with concerns of 200 gallons of diesel on board the wooden boat, which is decked out to look like the Yellow Submarine.
Because when you think Christmas, you think Yellow Submarine.
Oh, yeah. Five people were in the vessel when the fire broke out, but everyone escaped out the front hatch after they heard explosions. The boat's owner suffered smoke inhalation but wasn't seriously injured. Investigators said the fire was caused by a leaking line going from a gas can to a generator. Because, you know, when you have big tanks of gas to run your generator to light all the light bulbs that are strung willy-nilly on your boat.
Willy-nilly. Rat-a-tat-tat.
Because, have you ever seen the Christmas ship thing?
Well, are we talking about the one that's on the, Willamette?
Yeah.
I think so, because there's one that's on the Columbia, too.
It's the same organization. It's just, basically...
I think so. You've seen one boat covered in lights, you've seen them all.
It's whoever shows up with their lights on their boats, and they get to be in the parade.
Is there a guy at the... Is there some sort of a port of entry where there's somebody verifying that you are, in fact... You know, that you're... So the Harrods FU guy doesn't just show up with his zany FU boat and go out on the river?
I think it's kind of a, there's sort of a code of honor, I think, that you'll just show up and be Christmassy. Although apparently you can deck your boat out like the Yellow Submarine.
I don't know.
People find that festive.
Well, you know, but it's like, I don't really have any issue with that for the same reason that I don't have any. Like, you can't put too fine a point on that sort of a thing. Because if that were the case, they wouldn't be selling, like, Bart Simpson Christmas tree ornaments. Mm. And also, Snoopy wouldn't be in the Thanksgiving parade. Because, you know, there's nothing there that relates to anything else.
Well, I moved to this town, which is a wonderful town. I've lived here for 20 years, and I love living in Portland. But Portland is, in many ways, a little bit provincial. It is like a large town as opposed to a small city.
Right.
And I moved here, and I kept hearing about the Christmas ship parade and how awesome the Christmas ships were. And they were so beautiful, floating down the river with the lights. So my then husband, that I was not yet divorced from, we were like, well, we were living out in Westland. Let's go down to the river. Let's see these beautiful Christmas ships go by.
Must be magical.
And we went, and we stood out in the cold. And then at the appointed time, five boats with, like, light bulbs on them went by. And that was it. And I said, so this is the thing that they keep yapping about every year.
Well, but that's no different than anywhere else. I mean, it's, you know, look, here's the thing. The Rose Parade, which I have seen in person, you know what that is? As I always say, it's just traffic. It's just traffic covered in Kleenex. There's nothing impressive about it. I mean, people standing outside in the cold to watch something go by really slowly is the same in every city. It doesn't matter where you are. And whether that's on the river or not, same thing. Watching something drive by at a very, very decreased rate of speed is not an activity that holds my interest for very long. So I don't think it has anything to do with Portland. That's just people being amused by something that isn't all that amusing.
Oh, okay.
So, just FYI. It's like, you know what, the Christmas parade on the river with the boats is, you know, or the Macy's parade, in which, again, it's just balloons that happen to be larger than normal. Humans have this fixation on something that is either larger or smaller than the object typically is, and if it's going either faster or slower than the object typically does, like when you see it most of the time. Or if it's something that you wouldn't find interesting, like, by itself, but if you put it amid 10,000 similar items, it becomes interesting. This is why people watch marathons. You wouldn't watch a guy jog. Why are you going to watch 50 people jog? And if you say you wouldn't watch 50, we watch 5,000 people jog. How is that inherently more interesting? Answer, it's not. Except to some section of humanity that is amused by things when they are in a greater volume. Just makes no sense at all. I don't have a problem with it. I'm just saying that it's fundamentally illogical to me. And so either everybody else is missing the part of their brain that informs them that, like, you could just see this at the park. There's guys, you could go to the mall and watch old people walk around the perimeter all day with color-coordinated ankle and wrist weights. Or I am missing the part of my brain that allows me to enjoy what everybody else is seeing.
Now, I have seen two. There are two things that I would sit and watch, by the way, go by. One is when I lived in California, the Hollywood Christmas Parade was awesome because you could sit there on the curb and actual famous people would be within shouting distance. So you could just yell.
You could shout at them.
Yes.
Borg 9.
Yeah, you could just chant things at Mr. T. You get the crowd chanting T, 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 which we did. You could just yell things at, you know, Angie Dickinson. And it was awesome because they were just right there. So you don't get the chance to, like, yell something at Jimmy Stewart very often. And then the other thing is in San Francisco, they have this marathon every year, the Beta Breakers. And there are groups of people who jog, who run the race in teams, and they wear team costumes. And basically the entire parade route becomes this sort of party where everybody, like, goes out and, like, pitches their tents and puts their chairs out and then just drinks heavily and watches the thing. And often you just share your cocktails with some of these race participants as they're going by. They'll stop and you, like,
and is it like a marathon?
It is. And many of the people take it seriously as runners and actually want to run it. And a lot of the people just wear costumes and run along and stop and get free drinks.
But it's like a drunken marathon.
Yes.
Awesome. See, that I can get with that. That's a thing I could be, you know, Rick Emerson can throw his support behind.
And
that.
You get a bunch of guys like in thongs and Indian headdresses who come over and you're giving them mimosas before they just run away to the next place. That's kind of awesome.
No, see, that's the thing. That's America right there. That's unity. It's community. It's all of those things. I should mention, by the way, as we get into this, if you want to get this program on your mobile device, you can do that as well. If you're sitting there chained to your desk, marooned in an island, you know, of your own whatever. I don't know why I was getting ready to go with the word sputum there.
Why would you be in an island of sputum?
You know, you wouldn't be. That's the thing.
Well, you might be, but you wouldn't want to be.
I mean, you'd have to work really hard at it. I mean, it's like you couldn't be just your own sputum. You'd have to get, you really would have to have like a collection of it.
You could be in an island like floating amidst sputum.
But even that, no. Because
sputum,
you, I mean,
being a liquid, would be surrounding the island. It would not be the island
And it
itself.
Wouldn't be your own, because you don't produce that much sputum over the course of an entire life. I mean, really, not unless you've got something really like full on, like St. Elsewhere wrong with you. In any event, if you are just there at your desk or you're chained to your home computer or whatever and you want to take this program with you, you can do that. It's mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Coming up later on this hour, we got your Science on the March and entertainment news headed your way. I'll also have, I don't have this quite yet, I'm still editing some of this down. I'll have sound from Larry King's final program.
Oh, good,
night.
Yes.
So we have a little bit of story in that, but also some sound later on. Here's Don Taylor.
Prosecutors and the trustee of Bernie Madoff's estate have struck a deal with a former investor to add $7 billion in compensation money to the victims of his Ponzi scheme, according to the New York Times. The news will be formally announced in a press conference at noon, but sources told the Times that it will be the largest civil forfeiture payment in American judicial history and significantly raise the current Madoff compensation pool from $2.3 billion. Madoff victim Richard Friedman is pleased, but he says it's little comfort to many investors who had no idea Madoff was operating a Ponzi scheme.
There are hundreds of innocent parties who are old, impoverished, can't afford lawyers, and are terrified, who are presently getting sued by the trustee. And this is not fair.
You know, the thing about it is, too, is that, like, if you read the sort of underpinnings of how he put together the whole thing, it really, there really was, there. You realize at a certain point when you are doing any kind of investing or you're doing anything, you know, anything that involves any sort of high-level manipulation of your own money, that at a certain point you just have to sort of trust that the guy who's dealing with you isn't going to, like, swindle you and, you know, grab all your cash and run off to Bolivia with
yeah.
it. There just is no way. It's not like a guy running a three-card Monte game down on the street or something where you kind of, you know, you're sort of right there if he decides just to book with your lunch money. You know, with Madoff, it's just you just kind of have to think, well, what are the odds he's running a $7 billion pyramid scheme? I'm going to go for it. You know, you just don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this was over the weekend or just when I was out. But, yeah, we had the news just a few days ago that Madoff's son killed himself.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's a whole family that's kind of been tainted by that name.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, your first thought, you wonder, I mean, he may or may not have actually been in business with his father in any way whatsoever, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, he could have been completely separate from from the thing. But his father, just this incredibly evil person, basically, who destroyed the lives of thousands of people.
And they're never named Smith either. It's never a name that you can just vanish into the woodwork. It's always Bundy, you know, or something. Yeah, and he killed himself on the anniversary of the day they arrested his dad, which is why and he, incidentally, has not ever been charged with anything.
No.
And everybody sort of said, well, I bet he was in on it. But, I mean, there's an equally great chance, if not a greater chance, that he wasn't.
Yeah, but the thing is, even if he's completely, not complicit in any way, the fact is, his education was paid for with Madoff's money. He's been, his no doubt comfortable lifestyle, is basically courtesy of all of these people that Madoff screwed.
Well, and it's awkward party conversation as well.
Yeah.
All right, here is Don Taylor.
There we go. The mother of a 5-year-old boy who was found with an unloaded gun at school Thursday morning is being investigated by police in Palm Bay, Florida. Police were called to Riviera Elementary School just after 8 a.m. after school administrators reported that a preschool student was found with a handgun in his backpack. An investigation showed that the student got the gun from the rear floorboard of his mother's vehicle and put it in his backpack to show his friends at school. The mother was contacted and told detectives she didn't know the gun was in her vehicle.
No, of course not.
There doesn't appear to be any criminal intent in this situation, said Palm Bay Detective Joe Myers. However, the potential for harm was certainly great. There are questions here that need to be answered, and we will work with the state attorney's office to determine what, if any, criminal charges may apply.
So this is the mom's car?
Right.
So either, because putting it in the rear floorboard is one of those, the wire things, that's where, the guy stashes it so when the heat comes by, the man can't immediately see it, and then search your car. Like, I wouldn't even know where to hide a gun, in my car so that it wouldn't be detected.
Well, they say floorboard, so I'm thinking possibly that it was under the front seat and it had slid back to where the kid could see it or something. I mean, I don't know, because, a 5-year-old was able to, just pick it up and stick it in his backpack.
But under the floorboards implies that's...
It implies it was hidden.
That's like the carpet has been cut away, and that's... Yeah. I mean, that's like in the floorboards of your house. It's not, under your dresser or something.
Yeah, I'm really not sure what that means.
Well, it means the mom probably, in my assessment, it just means that the mom or whoever the mom is shacking up with, or whoever it is that drives the car that's in mom's name, probably stashed the gun at some point, and the kid either saw mom do it, saw somebody get the gun out of the hiding place at some point, or, look, I mean, kids just find things all the time and just shove them up their nose, so it seems like the opposite is probably true. Kids probably go around and just dig into things that are shoved elsewhere.
He dropped his SpongeBob stickers on the floor and lifted up the rug a little bit to pull it out and went, hey!
It's a shiny metal thing. Here's Don Taylor.
School administrators in Weymouth, Massachusetts, voted Thursday to ban student-teacher friendships on Facebook. The school committee voted on a policy that keeps teachers from friending students on social networking sites.
I love the idea of banning student-teacher friendships.
Yes. School officials say there haven't been any problems in the district and that they're trying to prevent any misconduct in the future. It's really unfortunate that we have to take such issues and have educators feel limited in their correspondence with students. But in today's day and age, we certainly do with all the cyber issues at hand.
Do they really... Christ, do they really say today's day and age?
Yes, that's the mayor of Weymouth, Massachusetts, actually said in today's day and age.
Did he also follow that up with the use of the word cyber?
Yes.
Okay. Not the information superhighway.
No, Mayor Susan M.K. really doesn't seem to be particularly, on the ball.
It doesn't. Well,
with all this stuff.
It doesn't really seem like there's any sort of the learning curve needed to attain that post in civil service didn't really seem like it's all that daunting.
I love people who still buy into the whole idea that the world is somehow more dangerous than it used to be, even though, pretty much every kind of personal crime that you would point at and then has steadily decreased over the years.
Well, that's like people who want to complain about Western medicine and say that Western medicine the Eastern medicine, that really, the Eastern, the Eastern culture where life expectancy is like 2/3 of what it is here. Western medicine, by every conceivable benchmark, by every conceivable unit of measurement, Western medicine is better. Look, here's the thing. As I always say, now is better than then. That's just the reality. That's just the way it is. Look, the fork is better than the chopstick. Get used to it. So advancements are always better than, you know, not having advancements. The other thing is, with Facebook, it seems to me that you would want them to have their friendship on Facebook where at least it would be documented if something were to go wrong. Because otherwise, it's just going to be, well, the kid says the teacher touched me, and the teacher says the student was leading him on, what was showing his ankles and everything, and then there's no telling who said what to who. Whereas with Facebook, even if it's not online and immediately viewable to the parents, let's be honest, you know Mark Zuckerberg doesn't throw anything away, so that conversation's going to be there somewhere. So you would have that if ever there was a push-comes-to-shove kind of scenario where somebody needed to be, you know, the truth needed to be found out in some way.
Yeah, paranoia leads to people just not exercising judgment and basically not wanting to exercise judgment. I think, you know, most people can agree what is an inappropriate relationship between a student and teacher. But, you know, to avoid any possible inappropriateness, it becomes a thing of like, you know, now you can't talk to a kid outside of school. You can't ever invite the kid over to your house. You can't talk to the kid on Facebook.
You know, I used to have actually when I was growing up, I think we did have a couple of which was creepy, by the way, a couple of teachers over to dinner at my house at one point, because I think one of the teachers was like a friend of my dad's or something. They went to like some, you know, members of the Knights of Columbus or something together. So we had some teacher come over for dinner. And then I don't know if I've mentioned this before. Maybe you mentioned a story that was a lot like this. Right? When I was in high school, I had this, they didn't call it home ec at that point. They started calling it consumer education. But I had this home ec teacher who would occasionally come by, and she would give me these like long lingering like neck rubs during class. Which, in retrospect, I mean, I should have just enjoyed, you know? Like, I should have just appreciated it for what it was, as opposed to... But then you're just feeling, like, self-conscious because it's like everybody's sort of looking... Not because I even really care, but because everybody's looking at you, you know? And, it's, you know, and she was a really unattractive lady. And, you know, and so everybody's sitting there watching, like, the unattractive lady come and put her tentacles all over you. And I should have just rolled with it, you know, and just should have milked that for everything I could, you know?
I guess. Unwanted neck rubs are always... just creepy. Yep. When people just come up and just start rubbing you, even if you like them. It's like, I don't want people just coming up and rubbing me.
I guess, but I mean, you know, now as an adult, I pay like $85 an hour for that. So
but you're asking for
it. At a massage clinic that is licensed and fully above board, by the way.
You know what I'm talking about, though, and women particularly know what this is about, because this is something that there are creepy guys who use this as an excuse to touch it.
The neck rub.
Oh. Where they just come up and just come up behind you and start rubbing your neck. And it's like, gosh.
So weird.
It's creepy.
I can never imagine, I mean... I can't imagine what kind of guy in the actual real day-to-day world thinks that that's acceptable, or that ladies are not going to respond to that with something, you know, with mace.
I don't know, but I swear to God, every woman, you ask them, every single woman everywhere has experienced this.
Let me ask you this. So you get guys occasionally who, you know, want a little physical contact, don't quite know how to do it, and so they figure they'll institute it by use of the neck rub. Now, is that guy somehow like a polar twin to the gay guy who then thinks he can just touch your bosoms because he's gay?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it's very similar.
And
yeah.
I'm not saying that's the preponderance of gay men, but I will say this. We all know at least one or two gay men who do that.
And, oh, yeah.
And that's a thing, by the way, that gay women don't do. Gay women don't just be like, hey, can I touch your junk? Because it's like, I think it's just, because it's not...
Or make weird, crude sex jokes at
you. You know why? And because it's not a gay straight thing, it's just a guy thing. It is a guy thing, but then under the cover of gayness... using their gayness like a cloak, Don, like a Romulan, cloaking device of some kind. It's like the license to be crude because of the theory that you're somehow sisters under the skin.
And also, they have that out that if you bitch at them about it, they'll just go, "Oh, come on, sister, you know I'm gay." You're like, "Well, that doesn't make it okay."
Such a queen. All right.
And stop saying I smell like tuna. God, I hate you. And then you punch him in the face, and then you're not friends anymore. Not that ever happened to me.
Okay.
Walk on, with hope in your heart, and you'll never, never walk alone.
All right, let's...
You will never...
I always forget that it has that second half there.
Walk.
All right. It is the Legion of News program. It is Friday, December 17th, 2010. We're so sorry for everything. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Coming up later on this hour, your entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program takes the airwaves at Rick Emerson. humormeet.com. Today, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio doing another installment of Humor Meet Comedy 101. Today, we talk about the life, legacy, and work of Mr. Eddie Murphy. That's coming up. We'll also have some sound from Larry King's final program and a top five for you as well. This is Don Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Here's your Science on the March for Friday, right here at Legion of News.
U.S. officials fear lax security at Indian laboratories could make the facility's targets for terrorists seeking biological weapons to launch attacks across the globe. This, according to comments in a leaked U.S. diplomatic cable made public today. The cable is part of a trove of documents sent from the U.S. Embassy in New Delhi that was obtained by the website WikiLeaks and published by the British newspaper The Guardian. The cables also dealt with accusations of Indian torture in Kashmir, India's complaints about Pakistan's handling of the Mumbai terror attacks, and the concerns of Rahul Gandhi, seen as India's prime minister in waiting, that Hindu extremists pose a greater danger to India than Islamic militants. But at any rate, terrorists planning attacks anywhere in the world could use India's advanced biotechnology industry and large biomedical research community as potential sources of biological agents, according to this cable, which was marked confidential. Given the strong air connections Delhi shares with the rest of the world and the vulnerabilities that might be exploited at airports, a witting or unwitting person could easily take hazardous materials into or out of the country. Getting into a facility to obtain lethal bioagents is not very difficult here, said
That's
one expert.
Comforting.
A second expert said the academic research facilities maintain only very loose security procedures. A harsh reality is that you can bribe a guard with a pack of cigarettes to get inside, said the expert.
Well, that's swell.
One source told the diplomats that India's thousands of biological scientists also might be recruited, either out of ideological sympathies or for money.
You know what I thought about doing when I was flying out of the airport at Salt Lake, coming back to Portland? I guess it would have been Monday. First of all, goddamn, they were just an unhelpful, snarling group of people in Salt Lake. Every time I go back to Utah, I rediscover one of the reasons I was glad to leave. I mean, you know, as much as I sort of joke about Utah in general and it being bland and relentlessly just like white and lame, and all of which is true, by the way, one of the other defining traits of Utah is just they have terrible customer service. And that extends all the way to like the TSA people, which is the only reason that I did not ask them this, because occasionally I'll just sort of amuse myself. It's half amusement, half the fact that I really want to know the answers to certain things as I'm going through, some of the, like, security or the metal detector or whatever. Like, I'm always intrigued by the fact that, like, half my jewelry makes, you know, beeps and half of it doesn't. And I guess somebody finally told me it had to do with it, whether or not your metal can be magnetized. But as I was going through the TSA thing, you were talking about how, it's incredibly easy to smuggle things through and you can bribe guys with cigarettes and, you know, and persons of a disreputable nature can gain access. I was thinking about this when I came through the pat down thing in Salt Lake. When they say don't leave your luggage unattended for long periods of time, or let your luggage be handled by or carry items for persons who are unknown to you, and I was thinking, well, what does that really mean? Like, how long do you have to be in somebody's presence before they are known to you? I mean, let me ask you this: is, for example, Jim Willig, who's going to be here next hour, is he a person who is unknown to you?
No, he's known to me.
Now, what makes that? How do you quantify that? Is it because you know his name?
Because I've spent some time chatting with him.
See, that's the thing. So, let me ask you this: what about Anna Griffin from The Oregonian? Unknown to you?
I would say she is known to me as well.
What about Jay Mackin? Unknown to you?
See, Jay Mackin, I would say Jay Mackin is known to me, but I would not trust Jay Mackin with my luggage.
See, that's what I'm saying. That's the defining line. There's the line of demarcation. If you were at the airport and you went, Don, could you hold my bag for a second? And then he just handed you something and kind of looked at you and then just scuttled away like a crab. Just, you know.
That may say more about Jay Mackin, really, than it does about the length of time I've known him.
All right. So it's about him as a person. Really, an untold number of years would not be enough to.
I honestly think he's capable of anything.
All right. Well, in any event, we should move on. You're listening to Cascadia.fm, home of Jay Mackin. Also of this very fine radio program, Legion of News. Here is Don Taylor.
A British department store unveiled a high-tech line of lingerie today that stays on thanks to magnets. The underwear, about to go on sale at high-end department store Selfridges, features tiny invisible magnets instead of fastenings to overcome the problem of tricky bra hooks. The bra comes with a matching pair of clip-on, clip-off panties, which have magnetic side strips.
Are you making this up?
No.
Okay.
Created by lingerie designer Letitia Schlumberger and named... She's French.
I'm sorry, and sexy. Oh, that's awesome.
And named Dement, the French word for insane.
That's great.
The underwear costs upwards of $256 for a bra and panties set. By the way, God, I hate the word panties.
By the way, it just sounds like it's right from the mind of Stan Freeberg or something. What is her name again?
Letitia Schlumberger.
Okay.
While fumbling to unhook a bra strap in a romantic comedy is a cinematic cliche, it can actually be quite a passion killer, said Helen Atwood, the head lingerie buyer at Selfridges. This new magnetic lingerie is not just easier to use, but also the biggest innovation in the underwear market in years. Those moments wasted with the bra fumble can now be put to much better use.
I think I speak for all men, by the way, when I say that I am 37 years of age. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I don't know at what point I just realized that that was a skill I was never, ever, ever going to master. I'm not saying I can't do it, but I'm saying it's like... Yeah. But, you know, like, we've all, like, you see the chicks where it's, like, with the one-handed.
Yeah.
You know, the one-handed and seemingly with, like, one finger. I mean, it's like, and every guy's had this experience of seeing some chick take off her bra, and it's like it's got some secret, like, breaking case of, you know, you need to get off the train and the door is jammed button.
Yeah.
That's hidden, that she just presses and the thing goes ding and it just springs open.
Yeah, I don't know how. I think those, for one thing, I think that's mostly women who have, who don't have very large breasts. Because you can't.
I try not to know women like that.
Because if you have a bra that has like the line of three or four hooks, you can't just do that with one hand, like flip and it's gone.
Well, I think this is a trait that is shared across women of all different shapes and sizes.
Because I'm a bad woman and I'm clumsy though. I will say this though, they say the thing about the bra fumble. Maybe I'm alone in this. I have never actually spoken to another human being about this, but I will share this with you, Rick Emerson, just between you and me.
Thank you. And Jay Mackin.
That bra fumble moment is like super hot. I've just always found that particular moment really hot because that's when you're about to cross that line. That things are about to get, like, really serious. There's been the making out and the kissing, and things are kind of heating up. And then there's the thing where the guy goes in, and he's, like, trying to figure out whether it's in the front or in the back. And he's right. And that's that moment. That is that moment before, basically, the curtain opens and the intermission and the overture is over. And I've just always thought that was... I like the bra fumble.
It's the moment between the Warner Brothers cartoon and the Marx Brothers feature.
Right.
Is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a you thing. You are really alone in that.
I can see why guys would not like the bra fumble.
Well, guys don't like it because
you're feeling awkward and you want to be suave at that moment and you're not.
Well, that's a couple. Yeah, it's a couple of things. One is men like to look as though they are. You know, you like to look as though you are skilled in the ways of love, as though you are. You know, you can fluently speak in the international tongue of l'amour, and you know, and part of that again, guys. So guys, and plus guys, if you have any amount of experience with different ladies. You've seen, again, them all do the magic release button somewhere. And so you then think, well, it's not a problem with the bra. It must be a problem with me as a man, and I must not know what I'm doing. And then, you know, as any guy will tell you, as soon as you have one, if you're a guy and you have, especially if it's like a woman that you have not been with before, or maybe you have a limited experience, with it, so you're still in that early stage of whatever, then it's like all of the undermining thoughts immediately start stacking up in your head. And women don't have this issue. And even if you do, you can just sort of like, you can just sort of fake it because like, we're not going to know. So, I mean, who cares? You know what I mean? Seriously, to the average guy in the average encounter with the average woman, there is no part of the female equation that can't be faked successfully. And I mean, I know that, like, if I had, like, a spectrometer or something, like, if some chick you've never been with before, guys can tell what's real and what's not and whatever. But I'm saying,
yeah.
But that's like, later on, because every woman is different, every man is different, whatever. So women can just sort of get by with, like, a ruse in every aspect of the sexual encounter. Men cannot, of course. And so for men, there's, like, all of this pressure that it's, like, it's much more of a public performance than it is for the woman. Because you can just think about James Joyce or something. Men, though, so it's like all of the self-defeating thoughts just begin spiraling, and then it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy at some point. So guys, and it's like a princess and the pea thing, where the taking off the bra is so difficult sometimes, and it just becomes this huge thing of like Gaussian proportions that suddenly undermines all your confidence. Now, that's part of it. The other part of it, though, is that guys hate the bra fumble because... Any momentary, I mean, even for just a picosecond, any fraction of a second pause in the activities, that's a time where the woman might actually stop and have second thoughts and go like, you're kind of hideous, actually. And I'm not as drunk as I was earlier. and all of those lemon drops you bought for me are kind of wearing off, and you, my God, you're horrible and greasy. Get your paws off me. And then it's like she's going to be able to sort of, you know, call off the sexing. So guys don't like anything. Once that train is rolling, guys just like her to keep on going down the tracks. We don't want to have any pauses or stops along the way because then it's, you know, then the deal could be off.
Well, the magnetic bra then may be the answer to that that dilemma.
I will say, though, that as puzzling and as flummoxing as it is, what guys find kind of hot, at least it is for me, is women who have, like, the very facile ability with taking off their own undergarments. I think guys find that really hot. At least I do. So
I always did very well with the plungy bra that hooks with just the one hook right in the front, in the middle, because that's really easy. And all you have to do is just lean down and go flip, and it's done. And plus, it's right in the front, and so that gives that whole display.
I don't know. I have asked women about that. I've said, like, so, because it's like, I think in my life, this is a conversation we should be having next hour.
You mean this isn't science or news?
Well,
or
it is science, sort of. The thing is, I know how we work, and I know if we stop now, we try to recreate this conversation next hour, it's not going to work.
I'll put this over. We will. We'll talk about magnetic bras.
But it's not going to. But see, that's the thing is, It's not going to. No. You know, it's this is like trying to recreate a honeymoon magic later on. We won't be able to. So I have to finish this thought, and then we'll just move on.
Right.
Because we can't. Yeah, I've learned that about the show, that if we try to restart the heart, you know, an hour and a half later, it doesn't. But I have on occasion asked women about that because bras are just sort of fascinating to guys, because guys don't have to wear, you know, guys, I guess, can maybe wear an athletic supporter if they're going to be out, like, bouncing around the basketball court or something. But it's like, you know, you don't really kind of have to wear undergarments unless you're wearing a truss. So guys are really, really not obsessed, but intrigued by those things. And I have asked women occasionally about the front snap bra, and I've said, like, what is the deal with that? Because I think in my life I've only ever seen that, like, a couple of times, maybe. I think I've only ever witnessed and maybe it is that I'm just, perhaps attracted to women who are, perhaps large enough on top that they are not really served well by that. Because I have had women say that they can't wear that because the pressure or the angles that it's at, and then the stress of it is so much that it actually just, it either doesn't hold or the bra just, like, basically just just becomes useless after a few weeks or something, because it's if you are very slender, if you're a woman with a willowy figure, that works, but not otherwise.
Again, it depends on the brand you buy and the actual construction of it.
That's another thing guys can't understand, is why bras cost like $85 and you have to have somebody go into the room to help you decide if it fits.
Because there's this whole cantilevering architectural kind of a thing going on with them that is just, there's physics involved that is beyond the ken of mortal man.
It's very perplexing. You're listening to Science on the March. It ended up being physics right there, and
see?
The structure of tensile strength and so forth.
Buttresses.
Somebody's asking if we can change the subject because he's, quote, becoming visibly aroused at his desk and he's at work. Okay. You are listening to Legion of News, brought to you by, well, speaking of science, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about Squires Electric by going to squireselectric.com. That is their website, squireselectric.com. And Joe Squires and his band of merrymakers, they will come to your home. They'll come to your bit. Perhaps not if you're visibly aroused. They might opt to come by later. They might not really want to do that. You know, like if there's going to be some uncomfortable tumescence, it's going to be visible to them. But you can contact them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609, be it electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring of any kind. If you're going to be expanding your business, going from one office to two to three, if you're going to be remodeling your home, if winter time is coming and you want to make sure that you're going to be able to run all your appliances and your hot water heater and your hair dryer and all the Christmas lights in your house and the Christmas lights on the tree and the Christmas lights in the yard, and everybody else on your street is going to be able to do the same thing, and your house is not going to be the thing that plunges everybody into blackness. You want to make sure that they have got the electrical system inspected and everything is working properly. And you know what? You could probably find some guy on Craigslist who's going to come by and do that for $12. But I mean, then you're going to get what you get, and I think we all agree you don't want it. So contact Squires Electric because they are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors, installers, and supervisors, and they're just good people. So 503-252-1609. If you get Ben, ask him to bring by some of his blackberry crumble. It's to die for. 503-252-1609. 1-800-926-0009 or SquiresElectric.com. Are we still in science?
We do. I have one more science story.
All right, here's your science.
3/4 of young children consume caffeine, found a new study. Some drink up to 3 cans of soda a day, and many start as early as age 5.
Well done.
The study was originally designed to look at the link between caffeine consumption and bedwetting, and to the researchers' surprise, results showed no connection. But sleep did decline as caffeine use went up. Just by looking at caffeine use in children in the first place, the study helps by drawing new attention to the widespread use of a stimulant that has unknown health consequences on young bodies. Caffeine is not a boogeyman, but at some point for all of us, too much caffeine is a problem, said William Warzak, a psychologist in the Department of Pediatrics at the University of Nebraska Medical Center. We just don't know where to draw the line for kids. The take-home point is that parents need to be aware of what their children are eating and drinking. Warzak is an expert in bedwetting disorders. Based on anecdotal evidence, he said, doctors often tell parents to give their bedwetting kids fewer liquids at night and to cut out caffeine, which is a known diuretic. To test the advice, he and his colleagues surveyed the parents of more than 200 children, aged 5 to 12, during routine visits to an urban pediatric clinic. Parents answered questions about what their kids ate and drank, how much they slept, and whether bedwetting was a problem. Caffeine use did not seem to affect bedwetting, but the habit of consuming caffeine was widespread. 75% of kids in the study consumed caffeine, mostly in the form of soda, and they drank a significant amount of it. According to parents' reports, kids between ages 5 and 7 consumed an average of 52 milligrams of caffeine per day, while 8 through 12-year-olds took in an average of 109 milligrams. A typical 12-ounce can of soda contains between 35 and 55 milligrams
of caffeine.
Oh,
please. That's not even a good strong cup of coffee. I mean, don't they have kids? Don't kids in France just start to, like, aren't they just swigging red wine right out of the bottle when they're like 5?
I think they're all drinking Four Loko in France.
Can I just tell you, by the way, the Four Loko thing, that has immediately become part of the popular culture. That's become part of the lexicon. I was talking to somebody, and this is somebody in New York. So this is as far removed from our own sphere of existence here in the Great Northwest. And I'd sent off something or other, and it was like I'd made some mistake. I'd inverted some sentences or transposed some sentences or something or whatever. And anyway, so I realized she sent an email back. She's like, hey, this thing you sent me doesn't make any sense. Did you really mean to put this here and this here? And I said, oh, sorry, you know, my mistake. And she responded. She's like, oh, it's okay. We'll just blame it on your Four Loko addiction. And I realized, and that was, I mean, this was like maybe 2 weeks ago when it was, that is a thing that we all went from not knowing about to immediately filing away as a cultural reference that we can make. A shared, but here's the thing. Because society and culture evolve so quickly and so rapidly now, if you were out of the country, if you were like on vacation or something for like 2 or 3 weeks, you probably have no idea. You missed the entire thing. It's like I was out of the country when the don't tase me bro thing happened. And if it hadn't been for Sarah and Greg, I don't think I ever would have heard about it because I just missed the entire deal. So there you go. Four Loko. File that away.
Yes.
You're listening to Legion of News. Here is Dawn Taylor.
That was all the science.
We're at the end of...
Yes.
All right.
By the way, I'm just checking in with you to make sure I'm not having a stroke or something. Does it smell like buttered popcorn in here?
Sure. No.
Okay.
I don't think it smells like buttered popcorn in here, but I would say this, that it smells, how do I put this? It smells hot, if that makes sense. It smells like something is cooking. It's okay. Like there's that sort of, and we are next to the, break room, so the break room is just across the hall from us. I would imagine, and plus it's, what do you call it, lunchtime.
No.
I would imagine somebody is cooking something. It does smell like there's cooking afoot.
Okay. Democratic Senator Ron Wyden announced yesterday he will undergo surgery for early-stage prostate cancer next week and will be missing votes tomorrow and possibly next week. With time winding down in the lame duck session, Democrats are struggling to pass as much legislation as they can before the next Congress is seated. And with a reliable vote temporarily out, Wyden's news sparked a cynical but still defensible process of refiguring vote counts. The Senate is slated to vote on the START treaty and the repeal, don't ask, don't tell, but not the $1.1 trillion omnibus spending bill, which died in the Senate on Thursday night. In a statement yesterday, Wyden said he expects a full recovery and he will be back to work full time when the Senate reconvenes in January. If the surgery goes well, he plans to be back at work next Wednesday.
You know something that I did not know and I just learned actually over the weekend? Because I seem to be, and you can draw whatever edible and Freudian conclusions from this that you would like, but I am surrounded by healthcare professionals. My sister, a nurse. One of my nieces and my nephew, a nurse. My brother, not technically a doctor, but he's a doctor of child psychology. My mom, a nurse. My wife, a nurse. My mother-in-law, a nurse. So I got some weird Randall McMurphy to the rest of the world's, like, ratchet thing going on. But as a result, I just glean all of this medical information. You know, it's just like through osmosis, because it's like in every room and every house that I am ever in, there's medical conversations going on. Did you know that most men die with, not of, but with prostate cancer?
I did know that.
I had no idea.
If you are a man, you will get prostate cancer.
It's just going to happen.
Yes. You may die of something else before it gets to the point where it would kill you. Like, you may die in your 90s of something completely unrelated to prostate cancer, but you will eventually, if you live long enough, you will get cancerous cells in your prostate.
That's just the weirdest thing, because there's like, Lara has this uncle that is, they're talking about, maybe we should test him. His, whatever the PS level or whatever the thing is they test you for. It seems a little tricky. We should, and he's like 92. You know, and it's like, and she was making the point, she's like, just let him, you know, who cares? And they're like, well, he's got signs of prostate cancer. And that's when she was having to actually correct her aunt and say, like, it's not a big deal. Because, like, most guys, almost every guy gets prostate cancer at some point. So, which is bad, you know, like, it sucks. But on the other hand, it's sort of comforting in a strange way. You know what I mean? Sort of like we all arrive at the same destination.
Exactly.
So I'm, by the way, now everybody is just asking, like in the text box, like, what about John from Gresham? Could he hold your luggage at the airport? No. And so forth. Gordon Shumway, by the way, and I see what you're doing there. It wants it known that if you come off, that you'll come off like too much of a player if you know how to take off a bra really well. So he fakes the fumbling when it comes to removing the undergarments.
Nice. As a woman, I will say I have always tried to like make the whole bra fumble as easy for the guy as possible. Because the thing is, I found what really works. And ladies, you can take this and get, if the guy is reaching around you and is doing the bra fumble, that's a really excellent time to kiss him on the neck. And let them know you're actually still in the moment. You're still interested. And if it seems to go on too long, you can, you know, a little chuckle or something. I mean, make it light. Make it fun. Let them know. Let them know you're not judging him. That you realize that, it doesn't have to be a test of will.
Somebody else just says, to hell with that. I remove bras with my thoughts.
Okay. He's that good.
He is Scott Baio in Zapped. All right. You are listening to Legion of News. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program filled with more Scott Baio references coming up next hour, by the way. That is at rickemerson.com. We'll also talk about Mr. Eddie Murphy. Jim Willig is going to be here with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Today we'll talk about the life, career, legacy, and work of Eddie Murphy. Also a top five we'll get to.
And you know what we haven't even mentioned?
You know, here's the thing, and I blame Patrick for this. I blame Patrick and his failing gallbladder.
Yes.
And there will be a reckoning at some point.
It's not failing anymore. It's gone now. It's failed. It was gone. It was sent away. It was chopped up into little bits and looked at under a microscope.
I'm just saying, don't get me wrong. It's not like I begrudge you and your desire to have, you know, a living husband.
Yeah.
But because of that, you know, I really have not been able to focus on the most important story of the week, which is me, Rick Emerson, appearing on Leverage this Sunday.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, it is.
We
that's
do
okay.
We have to talk
about that. No, apparently we don't.
Well, I'm sure the Legion of News listeners will be like, if you watch Leverage on Sunday, towards the end of this episode of Leverage, if you watch to see who the international news correspondent is on the TV giving the helping them get closure to the story, you might recognize a Mr. Rick Emerson.
That's two triumphant sentences right there, joined by a semicolon. And that's not if, by the way, that's when you watch Leverage this coming Sunday. That is the season finale.
Because you saw it, and so you know for a fact you not end up on the cutting
room
floor.
Now there was always the possibility, I guess, that when they did the sneak preview that they do some additional trimming, but they said that it was locked, like everything, because it had everything. It was like there were no temp. It wasn't the thing where, like, you're just screening and they go, well, this you're going to see a temp score, and we've inserted dogfight footage from the 1940s, you know, or whatever, like in Star Wars. It was signed, sealed, and delivered.
Plus,
so
your two sentences are very important. It tells the principals.
I wrap up the
what
story.
What happened to the
That's
bad
right.
guys? And
I am sort of like a "Where are they now?" card, but orally delivered, verbally delivered. So yes, watch for international anchor on this. and I swear to God, I'm not making that up. So that is this coming? Because if you listen to Legion of News, if you're perhaps not a Rick Emerson listener. First of all, you're lagging so far behind the rest of humanity. I mean, it can't even be quantified at this point.
You missed us discussing Rick's many auditions for Leverage.
Somebody
many failed auditions for Leverage before they finally cast him as international anchor.
They cast me as a guy who sits behind a desk and talks. So that's awesome. Sharon was suggesting that we put together like a clip reel of all of my failed auditions if I can get them from the casting agency.
Well, because you did not get cast as a West Virginia police officer.
Or as two different British cops.
Yes.
Or as a...
found out later you were probably doing an Australian accent when you were trying to be British.
No. You're confusing that with something else.
Because you said you were going to sound like Brian Brown.
No.
Here's cocktail.
You're conflating two things. Here's what you're thinking of. You are thinking of when I auditioned to be the voice of a video game ad.
Oh, okay.
And they were like, we want somebody who's British. And so I dug up cocktail, WTF, and I was modeling myself on Brian Brown, who, as you pointed out later on, is when he's Australian. And so there's me doing, you know, holy crikey, Konami's new soccer game is here. And it was I'm not very smart. And it was just, it's hard to believe I didn't get that. But she suggested just putting together like a whole endless clip reel of my failed auditions.
I'd like to see that.
Incidentally. So we'll be talking more about that later on. That's the Rick Emerson radio program. But yes, if you watch Leverage this coming Sunday, the season finale of the third season of Leverage, be watching for me, Rick Emerson, as international anchor.
Because your suit was so cosmopolitan.
Continental.
So continental.
Continental, Don. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do, speaking of which, let's do our entertainment.
Okay.
Nick Cannon announced on his radio show that he and his wife Mariah Carey are expecting twins. Carey's publicist, Sydney Berger, also confirmed the news. The 40-year-old Carey married Cannon, who's 30, over 2 years ago. Fashion Police member Kelly Osbourne, she's a member of Fashion Police. Is there such a thing as Fashion Police? Anyway, Kelly Osbourne told E! News that she's having surgery on her feet. Doctors have to break bones in my feet and reset them, said the 26-year-old. I've put it off because I've not been ready to walk for a month. Osbourne admitted she had foot problems for several years, but on her 2009 run on Dancing with the Stars kicked it up about 10 years and made it worse, she said. After her surgery, Osbourne added that she received an offer to work on a clothing line. I can't say which one just yet, but it's looking really good.
So is Fashion Police, is that a television program?
I have no idea. I don't know if that was just a snarky remark by the Entertainment Weekly people who wrote this, or...
I think maybe it's like a British thing, because, you know, they got the... Because everything over there is a different name. It's like X Factor and whatnot.
With the split of Dexter actors Michael C. Hall and Jennifer Carpenter, online rumors spread that Hall was romantically linked with Julia Stiles.
That's what I... So somebody told me that yesterday, that Hall was, like, sticking it to the Lumen chick on the show.
Stiles, however, denies any romantic entanglement with Hall. I have absolutely nothing to do with the split between Michael and Jennifer, she said in a statement. We're good friends and enjoyed working together. This is a personal matter between them, and we should respect their privacy. Although I prefer to keep my private life private, I felt compelled to dispel the rumors I was somehow the cause for this matter.
That's got to suck, too, when all of a sudden, when you know that there's, like, the evil hand of a publicist behind that, who is just trying to, like, throw everybody off the scent and just, like, you know, is flipping through the sort of cast book and going, her, Julia Stiles, it's her fault.
Well, also, and people are just dumb. It's like, I saw them having sex on the show. It must have been her.
Yeah, and also, you've done like acting or whatever. It's like any sort of like theatrical production or experience, however small or big, it's like you do develop a strange sort of intimate familiarity, you know, where just, and I think I think you behave in ways that maybe in regular society you probably wouldn't. There is like a sort of weird closeness, I think, that develops, which can sometimes to the outside observer look as though it is. I mean, that's why any two people ever in the world who do like a radio show together long enough are always then just assumed to be together, you know, like romantically.
Yeah.
So that's just the way it works. I got to say, every time I watch Dexter, you know, which, by the way, that will not be happening anymore. So every time, past tense, that I watched Dexter, when I would look at that chick who plays his sister, what is her name?
Jennifer Carpenter?
Carpenter. I just am sort of, like, surprised, but then sort of strangely impressed or happy or whatever that she got that gig in the first place, because she's so weird looking. She is such a strange looking woman.
She is.
Not actually ugly, but odd looking.
She has a very very angular face.
Yeah.
With a very masculine jaw.
Yeah, because it was that and The Exorcism of Emily Rose, I think, were the only two things I saw her do. So you wonder what kind of brave casting agent passed her name along, you know, and said, like, oh, look at this girl, and, like, you know, gave her glossy over to whoever, because knowing that they were probably, you know, they were probably going to get fired for recommending her.
Actor Shelley Malil, who played Haziz, Steve Carell's co-worker at the electronics store in the 2005 film The 40-Year-Old Virgin, was sentenced to life in prison for stabbing his former girlfriend with a kitchen knife.
No.
3 months ago, a jury convicted him of attempted premeditated murder and assault with a deadly weapon. Yesterday, Judge Harry Elias gave the actor the maximum sentence. When all is said and done, with time already served, plus the additional 5 years, Malil will be eligible for parole in 9 to 10 years. The 45-year-old testified at trial that he visited his ex-girlfriend Kendra Beebe at her San Marcos home in 2008 to apologize for taking personal items from her house. He stabbed her with a kitchen knife 20 times after finding her with another man. A San Diego jury found the actor guilty of assault with a deadly weapon and domestic violence in September. He was also convicted of assaulting the man at the apartment. I'm at a loss for words right now, he said in court. I failed miserably, not only as a human being, but as a father, son, uncle, brother, and friend. What I did to Kendra, I don't have the words to express my remorse. Nick Lachey is not getting married. Vanessa Minnelli told Holly Scoop that she and Nick Lachey are not getting married in Italy and that he was joking in his Wednesday interview on The Rachel Ray Show. She said she's just enjoying the bliss of being engaged.
It took me a minute to remember who Nick Lachey was.
Yeah, he was one...
98 Degrees and Jessica Simpson?
Yes.
Yes.
And right. Now he's the host of that Glee Club a cappella singing show that's on right now that just started. I can't remember what it's called. Sing Off.
Oh, okay. Yeah, here's the thing. I actually like Nick Lachey. He's... I thought he had a good thing going with Jessica Simpson. I don't know who pulled the plug on that whole deal. But, you know, somewhere there is an agent who was annoyed at the two of them for breaking up because they really could have had a good thing going with that, like, pseudo Donnie and Marie holiday special that they had.
Yeah.
I remember when they did the thing where he was, like, singing the duet with Kit with the Knight Rider car. And I remember watching that whole holiday special and thinking, okay, this really isn't for me. But if you're looking for family entertainment with just the ever so, you know, just a little bit of bawdiness underneath, this fits the bill. So I'm glad to see that he's landed on his feet, though, because I like that guy.
Two presidents, four television news anchors, and a 10-year-old son who looked ready to take dad's place behind the microphone turned out to bid Larry King farewell as he pulled the curtain down on his CNN talk show yesterday after 25 years. King, 75, was serenaded by Tony Bennett singing The Best Is Yet to Come via remote from Louisiana. King had announced this summer he would leave, ushered out by a struggling network. Once the dominant voice in cable television news, King has faded in a sea of sharp talkers. British talk show host and America's Got Talent judge Piers Morgan will take over at 9 p.m. in January. You're not going to see me go away, but you're not going to see me on this set anymore, King said. I don't know what to say except to you, my audience, thank you. And instead of goodbye, how about so long?
And I have some audio from that yes. That we'll get to next time because they crammed like 700 people in. To do the farewell.
Yeah, Schwarzenegger and Obama and Katie Couric and Barbara Walters and all those people just showed up to say, Larry King, you're old and you're going away and you're famous.
And I guess the thing is what's his name? Piers Morgan. It would be funny if it was Piers Anthony, though. So is he starting tonight? Is that the deal?
No, he's starting in January.
Okay, so it's weird that they did it on a Thursday, though, that his final show was on Thursday.
He just finally, I don't know.
He was just sick of it. I'm done.
There's right. Nothing left for me here.
Okay, I'm a husk. And on that note, we'll bring to a conclusion this exciting episode of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, December 17th, 2010. Don't forget, you can get this program later on today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or LegionofNews.com. The Rick Emerson Show is next at RickEmerson.com, featuring Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Plus, we'll find out if Don Taylor's had a stroke. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa, and so forth. Thank you all for listening. Be safe. Have a good weekend. We will see you Monday at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Thank you for listening.